Penguin Random House Canada presents The Art of Vanishing, a novel by Lynn Kutzkacke, read for you by Emily Shelton. For Michaela and Sarah. Nobody sees a flower, really. It is so small, we haven't time. And to see takes time, like to have a friend takes time. Georgia O'Keeffe, About Myself, in Georgia O'Keeffe, Exhibition of Oils and Pastels. No matter how many faces I have, there is no changing the fact that I am me. Kobo Abe, The Face of Another.
Prologue. Some time ago, when I was younger, I lived for almost a year without a single mirror in my home. It was the late 1970s, and I was renting a cramped six-mat apartment in one of those low-rise wooden structures that used to proliferate like squat dark mushrooms all over Tokyo. This was before the building boom took off, before skyscrapers and construction cranes came to dot the skyline everywhere you looked. The apartment was extremely run down and very cheap. The landlord didn't ask for references or a guarantor. Money was all he cared about, everything strictly cash on the line. The tatami mats squished underfoot, sagging with age and human moisture, and the windows rattled incessantly in their ill-fitting frames. In an old wooden building like this, you knew whenever the earth moved, and I felt every earthquake, big and small, through my bones, as if I were part of the trembling ground underneath. Even a minor quake would set all my teacups and rice bowls clattering like a percussion ensemble. There was a single gas burner for cooking, a squat toilet, a sink but no bath. The place was freezing cold in the winter and unbearable in the summer heat. It was here that the idea came to me of living without a mirror. One of the first things I did when I moved in was to tape a sheet of brown parcel paper over the only mirror in the apartment, the one hanging over the bathroom sink. I washed my face, brushed my teeth, and combed my hair staring at that brown blankness. And when the paper became too splattered and worn, speckled with toothpaste and soap, I added more layers. When my supply of parcel paper ran out, I was forced to improvise. I tore pages from the kinds of magazines that were filled with glossy photos but few words, travel and fashion magazines that I picked up out of my neighbor's trash. I made collages out of handbags and shoes and mountains and lakes, but no people, no faces. I wanted neutral, indifferent images. Yet for all my efforts, I discovered that what I had done wasn't enough. There were reflecting surfaces all around me, and they were impossible to escape. I saw myself in darkened glass panes at night, in shiny cooking pots and trays, in all the mirrors, large and small, in stores and restaurants, in subway car windows, even in the smooth surface of water in my sink. Most people are eager to catch a glimpse of themselves, accidentally or otherwise, whether it be a furtive check out of the corner of the eye, to assess the straightness of a collar, admire the style of our hair, practice a smile, or whether it be the long, lingering gaze we all perform in private. It's human nature to want to see ourselves, to confirm that the face we've put on is the face we wish to show the world, to study our presentation of self. Look at me, the face says. Here I am. I'm ready to be seen. If you've never tried to do what I did, just take my word. It's much harder than you can imagine. To deliberately turn away from a mirror takes a steely act of will. I didn't know it at first, but now I do. It's not easy to turn away from yourself. As I said, this was in the past, more than a dozen years ago. Yet every so often, even now, if I'm rushing into an elevator and it has mirrored walls, or if I turn too quickly toward a window at night, the reflection that leaps out at me is an unexpected visitor. For one startled moment, I glimpse a ghost of my younger self, and I realize the face I worked so hard to erase is still there. Sometimes, too, Sayako's shadow flickers just behind me, but when I whirl around, there is no one. It's been a long time since I last saw my friend Sayako. But lately I have the uncanny feeling that she's hiding inside my head, slipping in and out of sight like a minnow shimmering through a cold black stream, visible 1 minute and then, in a flash, gone. For a long time, I searched for her. But the harder I searched, the less likely it seemed I would find her. And then, even after there was no need to search, I somehow still felt as if I were waiting. Maybe I will always be waiting. Chapter 1. I first met Sayako Taniguchi in 1975 when we were both living at an old-fashioned boarding house called Miss Ito's Residence for Young Women. I had just turned 18 and had come to Tokyo to attend a specialized training school where I would study illustration. It was my first time living away from home, and it's fair to say I was probably more naive than most my age. Sayako was 2 years older and attending university. She was beautiful, rebellious, and unafraid, and I had never met anyone like her. Except for a 3-day school excursion to Kyoto in my last year of middle school, I had never been away from Mihama, a small town in Fukui Prefecture that faces the Japan Sea. This part of Japan was called Uranihon, the dark side, the backside. Because we got so much snow and rain, because the winters were so long, and because, especially in those days, it seemed so far from the bright lights of a metropolis like Tokyo, where people moved with brash purpose and conviction. Where I was from, I felt we were somehow slower, poorer, less confident. In the big cities, people had already moved well beyond the post-war era, through the period of high-speed economic growth and onward into widespread middle-class prosperity. The nation would soon enter a new decade of even more skyrocketing growth, of unbridled capitalism and rampant land development, of unlimited material goods, of boundless appetites and pleasures. On the cusp of that dizzying expansion of lifestyles and possibilities, my parents lived in a kind of time warp, their feet in the past, in the traditions of old. If they leaned forward at all, it was tentatively, uncertainly, like turtles poking out of their shells. I inherited this ambiguity toward the times. A part of me yearned to plunge forward without fear, to keep up with my young peers. But another part, perhaps my true self, was anchored to some older world. In my parents' view, Tokyo was nothing if not a place of considerable suspicion. Part of this was because my aunt, my father's older sister, had had a bad experience in the city. With a man, I heard my parents whisper. And she'd ended up returning home in a hurry, her nerves frazzled and shot. My father in particular was not pleased about my going far away, but I was excited. And while my mother was worried, she was also proud of me and tried to mask her anxiety with a show of being happy. Ever since she found out I was moving to Tokyo, our neighbor at the end of the street, Mrs. Murakami, somehow contrived to be outside sweeping her doorstep every time my mother and I walked by. The Murakamis owned a small dry cleaning shop in the middle of town, and Mrs. Murakami was always dressed impeccably in crisply ironed outfits, even if only to sweep or put out the garbage. She had a sharp appetite for minute class differences. My mother was a housekeeper at the local inn, and one of her duties was to oversee the laundry, which was done in-house and never sent out to the dry cleaners. That would have been much too costly. Mrs. Murakami raked her stiff-bristled broom vigorously across the flagstones in front of her house. "Must be expensive," she pretended to be talking to herself. "Good morning, Murakami-san," my mother said. It was 2 days before my departure. "Oh my, Okada-san, I didn't see you." And then, as if she had only just noticed my existence, Mrs. Murakami dramatically swiveled her head in my direction. "Oh, Akemi, I heard you're going to Tokyo." I nodded. "So far away." She let her head sag mournfully and rested her chin on the handle of her broom. "Your poor parents. Aren't you concerned they'll be lonely with
Sample complete. Ready to continue?